Okay, moving on, after this session, we'll have a break. Please go in, take a look at the other vendors, and talk to our speakers that we've heard from this morning already. I'm pleased to introduce Richard Soya, Senior Principal Engineer at NXP. Just one small little bit of trivia, which I found really interesting. So he spent the last, even though he's from Scotland, educated in Scotland, when he came to the United States, he decided that he liked Austin, and he liked it so much that he's been in the same building for 22 years. I think that's a record for most people. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, it might have been 22 years, but it was with three different companies. So, well, thank you. I'm going to give a little bit of a talk on some of the things that we're doing and what's been happening in car security over the last few years. And while this title refers to V2X, and the previous presenter gave a very lucid explanation of some of the challenges with anonymous authentication, and I'm not going to be focusing specifically on V2X, but just give you an example of the kind of things that are being introduced to enable V2X. One of the challenges that, in fact, was mentioned by Brian is, in fact, the performance needed to execute the authentication operations, and basically just the general download and community, and the huge amount of data traffic that's going to occur between V2V, especially, I suppose, in the future, if it all comes about as we maybe hope it will. So really, one of the biggest challenges today is the fact that cars are connected in various ways. I mean, you could argue that a car is a cloud-connected computer network on wheels, so that not only is there connectivity to the infrastructure and, in the future, to the V2V communication with other vehicles, there's a vast amount of communication within the car itself. Most cars have upwards of 100 ECUs, what are called ECUs. These are electronic control units, each of which plays various functions in the car, some of which are safety critical, others are for entertainment purposes, others may not be particularly critical. But they all have some form of interconnectivity that opens up a number, it basically makes the attack surface very, very large in the vehicle. And also things like remote keyless entry and your personal device connectivity via Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, NFC connections. All of these things produce a very, very large attack surface, and it's something that has to be managed at the car level eventually. It's a very attractive opportunity for hackers, and one way of mitigating this is really to improve the security of the components within the vehicle. So one obvious thing is adding security to prevent unauthorized access that might result in theft of the vehicle or theft of some of the components or theft of personal property within the vehicle. Other things, of course, is security to protect private data that might be stored in the vehicle. There's an opportunity for introducing sort of monetizing features within the vehicle, not only, say, for toll functions which exist today, but in fact to maybe automate the process of paying for gasoline at the pump without having to scan your card at the pump itself. So those things also require an increased level of security. And then lastly, but not in fact, lastly, and probably the most important one, is really adding security to improve the safety of the vehicle. Remember, a vehicle is basically a cyber, it's a cyber secure technology, and any form of breach of security on the vehicle control system may result in serious harm or even death to the occupants or even people outside the vehicle. So what that does is it introduces a very high public awareness. There's a lot of press releases on car hacking over the last few years, which have really been caused by lack of security. So this is, you know, this is something that has been a problem in the past with the automotive industry, is that they never really considered that someone would perhaps do this. So there have been, for instance, the Fiat Chrysler hack last year on the Jeep was really due to an open port on a cellular Sprint connection that really opened up a lot of opportunities for the remote hackers that took control of the vehicle and was able to make it slow down, brake, even drive into a ditch, if you've all seen that video. So these are the kind of things that we really have to protect against at the hardware and software level that's built into the vehicle, and it's really a layered approach that we're using. You have to, first of all, attempt to prevent the access using authentication means and firewalls. Of course, so that doesn't always work. We have to be able to detect attacks as well through various methods. One is running real-time integrity checking. That can actually be done in hardware to detect any modification of software, for example, on the various microcontrollers in the ECUs. And other things that can be checked are profiling, say, the network traffic within the vehicle. That is, the communication between different ECUs can, in fact, be monitored to detect if there's any form of snooping or other forms of intrusion. And then again, even if that is defeated, then you have to be able to recognize how to reduce the impact of any security breach that might occur. Because remember, as I said, that the vehicle has to be designed in a way that meets certain safety requirements. And the effect of security breaches must not be made to violate those security goals. And then again, if certain security vulnerabilities are identified, then we have to provide some method of updating that. And something that's becoming more prevalent is over-the-air updates in vehicles. I know Tesla does that right now, and many of the major OEMs are beginning to look at this option of over-the-air updates, and that introduces its own challenges with the security of that over-the-air update and the validity of it. So just to give you a kind of overview of car control system. So it's really composed of many ECUs, electronic control units, as I mentioned already. And each of these boxes represents a single ECU. And they are connected through various in-vehicle networks, IVNs. There are different types of networks. So there's a wide variety of different networks that have existed for legacy purposes and others for performance purposes. We've got CAN, FlexRay, Ethernet is becoming more prevalent, LIN is a low-speed protocol. These all have their own challenges, and generally none of them are inherently provide secure communication. But if you look at some of the nodes that are particularly important are the ones that are associated with cloud-based services, for example, through cellular or BLE, and Bluetooth, and NFC and wireless, and then the V2X communication that will be introduced next year, and I know in the Cadillac next year, and in the future years may become far more prolific. So these nodes themselves, really, we consider require the highest level of security. And the color coding here really is supposed to represent the kind of security levels that are needed, with green representing the highest security level, and the white representing the lowest security. So we need security both at the networking nodes, the external communication nodes, as well as security on the internal networks. The security on the internal networks is maybe not quite such a big concern, but it is there is an opportunity, for example, if your car is taken into the shop and someone attaches something to the CAN network, that then gives them an opportunity later to access some of these control systems, which have got significant safety implications, such as adaptive cruise control and engine control, transmission, steer-by-wire. So looking at these different types of security features, they can be managed in different ways. So first of all, in the ECU itself is really composed of a microcontroller plus a number of other components, but the ones I'm focusing on here are really the microcontroller and its physical interface to the in-vehicle network. So they can range from no security through to a very high level of security, and then some form of hybrid security. There are main trade-offs between these are really to do with cost. So no security doesn't cost you anything, and the highest level of security is going to cost the most. But then again, the highest level of security is generally needed if you are planning to use some form of payments via the car. So really, just to sort of show you some of the highlights of this, we have the capabilities are being introduced to allow retrofitting authentication of in-vehicle networks through a secure PHY. That's maybe the simplest form of adding security. Then if you need a higher level of security, particularly in securing the firmware of the system, you'll need a secure MCU of some form that has some maybe hardware accelerators built in that can perform, for example, a secure boot operation and maybe real-time integrity checking of the firmware. Then the secure element is really the most trusted form of security, as I mentioned, for payment purposes. And you could, in fact, introduce a sort of hybrid form where you can combine both secure element types of products with the secure MCU to be able to perform multiple operations. So one of the things that we also look at is really showing the difference between functional and physical security. And those tend to be related to the level of protection that you want against attacks and the types of attacks. So functional security is mainly associated with sort of attacking cryptographic functions and protocols that don't require physical connection to the module that you're trying to attack. So that would attack things like hardware accelerators, firewalls, virtualization of processors. Physical attacks, however, generally require you access to the chips themselves and the boards to allow you to do side channel attacks, sort of passive side channel attacks based on timing or power, and also attacks using more active means, like injecting faults into the device through power glitching or clock glitching. And one of the most severe, of course, is where you can reverse engineer the chip itself to extract secret keys or get it to behave improperly through applying, say, light sources, maybe laser beams. All of these things are recognized as attack vectors, and in particular, the things like the secure element are devices which have been designed and should be designed to protect against those kind of physical security where there's a potential for a large financial loss. So physical attacks, while they may be difficult, may lead to more scalable attacks that can be managed remotely. So if we look at the secure MCU that I mentioned before, the secure MCU should have a number of hardware components built into it, which are associated with cryptographic hardware acceleration in the form of AES, RSA, ECC, Two random number generators as well are built in hardware that meets certain entropy levels that are dictated by certain standards. Pseudo-random number generation, security lifecycle management, I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Various forms of password protection, secret key storage, zeroizing memory to protect, to prevent access to secret keys that are stored in RAM, tamper-proof memories that can provide an audit trail of any tampering of the embedded flash, for example. Other side channel attack countermeasures, you know, to protect against power and clock glitching and temperature variation. And then, of course, there's a thing called the Trust Zone, which is an ARM-based technology that can also be used. And combining these kind of functionality allows you to implement things like secure boot, set up a chain of trust, provide symmetric and asymmetric crypto functions, provide compliance with existing guidelines and protocols such as Evita and SHE that come out of the Europe, and also provide support for over-the-air updates. So I don't know what my time is. Let's see, 5 minutes. Okay, I'll move a little bit faster. So one of these elements can be something like a secure element, which really is designed to protect against physical attacks and can be certified against the common criteria specifications. Incorporates the various crypto algorithms needed for financial transactions. So one of the other things that we think is important, especially for vehicles, is because of their very long lifespan, it's not like a consumer product, which if it breaks, you throw it away and buy another one after a couple of years. And I know I've done that with my routers often enough. But with a car, you tend to have a very long development life cycle, not only a development life cycle, but then a in-field, as we say, life cycle when the vehicle's sold. And then there's a potential for field returns, say, in the event that you have to have a recall or when the vehicle reaches its end of life. So those things all require different levels of security generally. For instance, in development phase, you may not want any security at all, but you want to have that same hardware in place to allow you to develop the algorithms that are needed to operate the vehicle in its various forms. So out of, say, once the chips come out of fab, they can have a different and maybe less protected security capability compared to when they go into the application development. Furthermore, that security can then be locked down when the vehicle goes into production and then sold to the consumer. And again, you may need to regress the security at some point when you get a field return. So all of these are big challenges in the semiconductor level, where you have to be able to prevent a security capability from being regressed backwards, but at the same time allow a certain amount of regression in the event that you have to make a field return. So one example, which I'm going to go through real quick because it was already talked about by Brian this morning, is securing, you know, V2X communication. So some of the big challenges there, as Brian mentioned, was the being able to maintain security and privacy at the same time. So you want to not allow people to track you while you're driving, but at the same time guarantee that the messages that are being transmitted are authentic. So one of the challenges in V2X communication is the data rate of the authentication data rate. It's estimated it could be up to 1,000 messages a second have to be authenticated, and that will really require hardware acceleration. And it's unlikely that that can be done cost effectively in software alone. Another thing that is the cloud services is significant. Over-the-air challenges, over-the-air update challenges. Automobiles, a cyber-physical device. A bad over-the-air update can have a very serious consequence. So security has to be examined holistically, right from the server through to the sensors on the vehicle and the memory system on the vehicle. So that will really involve a new approach in the way that automotive security is architected, and the entire vehicle electronic system is architected in the future. So embedded system designers that are traditionally use some fairly simple techniques to implement their vehicles will have to acquire a skill set from the IT domain. And of course, there are challenges that OEMs cannot access private vehicle information as well. So that may become an issue as well in the future for over-the-air updates that have to be authenticated. So in summary, I think the most important thing is that security must be designed into the architecture of the vehicle electronic system. And that really means that our current set of system designers need to acquire more security skills that maybe they'll get from the IT domain. Also, end-to-end security is vital. We think that hardware security accelerators and architectural components are essential. Not only for performance, but also to withstand the kinds of physical attacks that may occur in the future. And the security life cycle is also a kind of important aspect to ensure the security is managed correctly through the product life cycle and to the end of life. So those companies that have got a solid history in both automotive electronics and the security technologies are the ones I think are going to really succeed most in the connected car market of the future. So with that, I'd like to thank you very much. And this is my email address, richard.sawyer@nxp.com. So please feel free to send me an email if you're interested in following up with that. Okay. Thanks.